I'm going to start in that paragraph that says, the world we see merely reflects our own internal frame of reference. The world we see only reflects our own internal frame of reference, and that means the world that you see just reflects the dominant ideas, wishes, and emotions in your own mind. What I'm looking at, all the ideas, wishes, and feelings that I have. He says, projection makes perception. That means we look inside first, then we decide the kind of world we want to see, and then we project that world outside, making it the truth as we see the truth. We make the world true by our interpretations of what it is we're seeing. Okay? If we are using perception to justify our own mistakes, our anger, our impulses to attack, our lack of love in whatever form it takes, then we see a world of evil, destruction, malice, envy, and despair. So we must learn to forgive a world of evil, destruction, malice, envy, and despair. We must forgive the world of evil, destruction, malice, envy, and despair, not because we're being goody-goody, not because we're going to forgive because we're trying to be charitable. We're going to forgive because what we are seeing is not true. We have distorted the world by our twisted defenses, and therefore we are seeing what is not there. As we learn to recognize our perceptual errors, we also learn to look past our perceptual errors or forgive. At the same time we look past our perceptual errors, in other words, at the same time we forgive ourselves, which means we start looking past our own perceptual errors in ourselves, when we look, then he says we are looking past our distorted self-concepts to the self that God created in us and as us. You might not recognize it, but that one paragraph covered everything. Really? Yeah. That one paragraph covered the whole course of miracles. It covered everything that we're working on, everything that we're trying to learn. That one paragraph. So, first of all, right now as we look around this room and as we go about our day-to-day, what we're looking at is our own internal frame of reference. Everybody with me on that? So we're going to go this one. We're going to go line by line. The minute somebody says they don't see what I'm talking about, then I'm going to say it again. I'm trying to help you out. But if you nod, I'm assuming you got it. Okay? That means that the world that we see reflects the dominant ideas, the dominant wishes, and the emotions, which I think is interesting, the emotions in your mind. Because people tend not to think of emotions as something that you have in your mind. We think of feelings as something we have in our body. So I'm seeing the feelings in my mind, the ideas in my mind, and I'm seeing the wishes in my mind. This is what I'm looking at as I'm looking at you. Okay? Then he says, projection makes perception. And I've heard that term projection a lot. Then he goes on to tell us how our whole way of seeing things operate. When I walked into this room, I decided the kind of experience that I wanted to see. As soon as I walked in here, I decided the kind of world I wanted to see. As soon as you walked in here, you decided, we can make this more specific. As soon as we walked in here, we're looking at the class we decided to see. Then he says, what happens is, you decide what you want to see, and then you project what you want to see outside. Okay, so let's say I walked in here and I decided that I wanted to see, myself as not having a good time. I didn't really want to come here in the first place. Okay, then the course says what I'm going to do is project that thought outside, and then I'm going to try to make that thought the truth. I've decided I don't like being here, and I'm going to look at everything that happens in this class as a way to prove that I really don't like what I see.
But we're so cute.
But if I decide I don't like you, then all I'm going to do is make that the truth. I'm going to do everything I can to come up with everything about you that I don't like, because I really decided not to like you before I started looking at you. I decided how I was going to see you.
And I ain't crazy about you either.
Okay, everybody with me on that?
Yeah.
We look inside, decide what we want to see, then we project it outside, then we try to make it true. I decide what I want to believe. I look inside my mind, decide what I want to believe, then I try to project the world outside me based on what I want to believe, and I want to make what I believe true. Then he goes on to tell us how we do that. Because the next thing that goes to my mind, well, how do I do that? Well, he says the way that you do it is you try to make it true by you interpreting what you're looking at. So I'm going to make what I believe. I don't like you, so I'm going to make that true by giving myself every interpretation I can that'll make that true. I'm going to interpret that you don't like me. I'm going to interpret that I really can't communicate with you. I'm going to interpret that you're hard to get along with. I'm going to interpret that you don't act the way I want to. See, I'm trying to make my interpretation true. And I do it. I make what I see true through my judgments, my interpretation. Now, we all can listen to this, and it sounds like it makes perfect sense. But I have a tendency, as soon as I stop talking about it in this class, to forget that I'm doing that process. And it becomes a totally unconscious process. And I really start thinking that what I'm looking at is really there. See, that's what he goes on to say. He says, if you are using perception to justify our mistakes, what are our mistakes? If I'm using my perception to justify how angry I am at you, if I'm using my perception to justify my desire to attack you, if I use my perceptions to justify my lack of love in whatever form it takes, he says, if you're trying to justify your anger, if you're trying to justify your impulses to attack, if you're trying to justify your lack of love, then you see a world of evil, destruction, malice, envy, and despair. So if I see evil anywhere, if I see destruction anywhere, if I see malice, if I feel envy, if I feel despair, then what I'm looking at is the perception that I'm using to justify my upset. Because if I want to be upset, then I've got to have something to be upset about. So I'm using everything I'm upset about to justify my interpretation of how I'm seeing things. Whew. Okay, let's talk about it.
That's why they say, I need to see things differently.
Right. And the reason why I need to see things differently, because I'm using my perception to justify my anger. I'm using my interpretations to justify my anger. I'm using my perceptions to justify my anger. It's like when my son and I had a talk when I was there, and we have such an opposite belief system that we use that sometimes to keep us from being as connected to each other as we like to be, even though we love each other. We sat down and we looked at each other, and we both said that the only thing that stood between us was our perceptions. Just my perception of your perception, which was interesting. It was my perception of his perception of me was getting in the way, and his perception of my perception of him was getting in the way. Notice it wasn't my perception of him, his perception of me. It was my perception of his perception of me. We both realized that was the only thing that was standing between us. So what we did was we bypassed the perception of differences, gave ourselves complete freedom to have those differences in perception, completely let our heart open up to each other, and then joined on the things that we both had the similar perceptions about, and then had an incredible experience of love with each other. And that was a direct application of the truth. That was a direct application of forgiveness. We were both, like you said, to forgive means that you're willing to look past your perceptual errors to the Holy Son of God. And that's what happened. You know, I was willing to look past my perception. How did I know my perception was wrong? I knew my perception was wrong because I had feelings of separation, anger, despair, and attack. That's how I knew my perception was wrong. So the Course would say, well, how do you forgive? Well, what you do is you learn how to look past the perception. Now, notice we were only able to look past our perceptual errors because we wanted to join. See, he wanted to love me past what appeared to be the differences. I wanted to love him past what appeared to be the differences. So we did. It was a decision that we made. It wasn't an argument that we had. You'll never convince somebody to love you. You got to want to. But you got to walk in the situation with the attitude that you're going to give love regardless. And that was a decision I made before I walked in the house, was that my only purpose for being there was to love my son. It wasn't to get my son to follow my ideas or my beliefs, or for him to follow my ideas or beliefs, or even for us to agree. My purpose was to be there to love my son. And that purpose created the circumstances that allowed me to do that. It's just like the book says. The Course says your goal will actually create the circumstances that would allow your goal to manifest. So my goal to love was much more important than me knowing how to deal with my son. With most people are busy working on, you know, what intellectual communication can I have with you that's going to resolve this conflict? See, I could have been walking there, but what can I do to convince my son that he and I should be close? What words am I going to use? What am I going to say from the Course? And that wasn't the way I looked at it at all. I walked in the house with, I want to love my son. No matter how my son is, I want to love my son. I want to be a means for love and peace to come to my son. That goal created the circumstances that created a healing. And that's a practical application of the Course. So that's what it says right here. He says, all this we must learn to forgive. Not because we're being good. It's not even about me being Mr. Nice Guy. It's not even about being charitable. Because if you're walking around in the world where it looks like all there is despair, he says what you're doing is you're looking at something that's not there. And so you got to realize that if you're walking around in a world full of despair, you're looking at your own perceptual errors. And so you got to learn how to look past all the false ideas you've been taught since the day you were born so that you can get to the truth. And let me tell you, it takes a really dedicated, powerful person. And you know what a powerful person is? A powerful person is just somebody who wants peace enough in their life to do what's necessary to have it. A weak person is a person that does not follow their peace. They don't do the things that give them peace. They do everything that causes them conflict and fear, thinking that when they take care of the thing that causes them conflict and fear, then they'll have peace. That's a weak person. That's a weak mind. That's what weak minds do. That's deep. Anybody else have any thoughts about that paragraph? Because that paragraph says it all. That paragraph really learned would free all of us. We would be free today. If I had walked in the house with my son, making the truth of the Course be dependent on whether or not he and I connected, that would have been a trick of my ego. The truth of the Course, I know the truth of the Course by my willingness to maintain my peace no matter how my son responded. It couldn't be based on getting my son to respond. It had to be based on I keep my peace even if my son and I continue to have communication difficulties. That's practicing the Course.
And how were you able to do that? Was it just through practice?
Yeah. It was through practice, and you know what? The other thing it was through was motivation. I was deeply motivated to join.
And you clearly had the goal in your mind.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah, because before I was at my men's group the week before I went, and one of the things that I brought up was the fact that I was having some anxiety about going and visiting my family because of the challenge sometimes that I have with my son and daughter in terms of our communication because they're born-again conservatives. And they are.
I wouldn't even go there.
Yeah, but at the same time, they're nice, they're giving, they're disciplined, they're respectful, they're loving. They are everything you could want in two children, other than that they just believe in hell and they believe in sin and they believe in eternal damnation. But they also believe in kindness and forgiveness and loyalty and dependability and sharing and honesty. They also believe in all the other beautiful qualities that they're learning as Christians too. And they just happen to be two kids that actually want, they want to live their belief system. And so sometimes out of their love for me, they would feel like they needed to save me because I was going to hell for teaching the Course in Miracles. Okay, so, I mean, what other test would I choose as a Course in Miracles teacher? I mean, it fits perfect. What else would a Course in Miracles teacher who's learning unconditional love, how in the heck would I get the lesson than more than having to practice it with the people that are actually my own offspring? I mean, what more appropriate lesson could you possibly get? You know what I'm saying? And so it makes perfect sense to me that I wouldn't have two children that were into the Course in Miracles. It wouldn't give me any opportunity to practice the Course in Miracles principles at the level I need to for my spiritual growth, because I'm at the point in my spiritual path where I actually have to apply the truth and I can no longer philosophize about it or analyze it. My reality doesn't give me the luxury of trying to decide whether or not what the Course says is true. Like I watch people a lot of times come to the class, they sit back, like they really got a choice about whether they're going to change or not if they want a different result. You know, it's like, no, the Course says it's a total illusion. Choice is an illusion because there really isn't anything to choose between. There's either what's real or there's nothing. So we really don't have any choice but to ultimately choose for our peace. We really don't have any choice but to ultimately choose for love. That's the only choice going to be left. So you're going to get to a point in your life that the only thing you want is to feel peaceful and joyous inside and free. It's not going to be like, do I want to feel that, and do I want to feel limitation? You're going to go, I want to feel free. I want to feel alive. I want to feel safe all the time, not some of the time, all the time. And about the same time you realize that you really are serious about your peace will be the exact same time that you realize that you've been through enough things in your life to make that choice the only sensible choice for you to make. Because you have seen how many times you tried the other way and it simply hasn't worked. So you'd be motivated. You know that your happiness is never going to come from anything outside yourself, because everything you've tried your whole life has never made you happy completely. So all of a sudden it hits you. You know what? Anything I've been trying for 55 years that hasn't worked yet, I might want to reconsider using that method. Me personally,
right.
And then your inner self says, well, you don't have but one other choice. What is that? Well, the other choice is that you must have to do the opposite. You must have to start looking inside yourself,
or looking inside yourself in a way, because I've been looking inside myself for a long time.
But that I beg to differ with you. That's why you're sitting up here right now wanting peace. It's because you've been looking inside yourself for a long time, and you're looking inside yourself for a long time led you to this moment. So you're looking inside yourself. Huh. You're looking inside yourself, been kicking butt.
I've been doing pretty good.
Yes, I know exactly, and that's what I'm here to tell you. Is that you're doing better than you think you are, only you just reached that point in your spiritual development where you have to apply the truth. You're at the point in your spiritual development where now it's time to live it. And that's why it's not a lot of people. Read the book Down to Livingston Seagull. You ever read that book?
Yeah.
About this girl that didn't want to be like the rest of the girls. He didn't want to just spend his whole life trying to get fish. You know, so he wanted to see how good he can fly. He just wanted to learn how to fly so he could go beyond his limitations, right? So he spent all his time trying to learn how to fly instead of trying to get fish, fighting for fish. And so his mother told him he must have been out of his mind. He wasn't going to survive if he didn't learn how to get the fish, right? But he's working on learning how to fly. And then when he tried one night to really do the best flight he'd ever done, he crashed into the ocean, almost died, but he refused to give up. Sound familiar to me? Then he finally learned how to fly. Well, he learned how to fly so doggone good that getting fish was child's play for him. But just check that out. Through trying to learn how to express who he really was, the byproduct of that was that it made it a lot easier for him to get food. And it always works that way. The more you seek for your own unlimited nature, the easier it'll be to handle the stuff in the world that you're trying to handle. The world gets easier and easier to handle the more you seek your unlimited self, that self beyond your perceptual errors. But I'm so busy trying to be a father. See, I couldn't have walked in. See, first of all, I couldn't have walked in the house with my son and daughter, I don't think, and pulled off what I pulled off if I thought I was a father. I think the biggest problem to being a parent is believing that that's what you are. The biggest problem to being a wife is believing you're a wife. The biggest problem to being a husband is believing you. The minute you believe you are the role that you're playing, you're getting ready to screw yourself royally. Okay, the minute, because then you take a responsibility for a situation that's not yours. And you know, and you feel personally responsible for your children now. Now, everything that happens to their children is your children is a direct reflection of your ability as a parent. Instead of realizing that that child has its own spiritual lessons that it came here to learn, that it was going to have to learn whether you was its parent or not. The best you could do was give a demonstration of being yourself at the highest level so they could get a good role model. But you're not going to, if your child has a lesson to learn in how to love something more or do something more, you can be the best parent in the world. They're still going to have that lesson. The only difference is when they have the lesson, they'll have your teaching to help them deal with the lesson when it shows up. But you as a parent are not going to prevent your child from learning or going through whatever they need to go through in this life in order to learn their spiritual lesson. You can't hire enough bodyguards. You can't put enough GPS satellites on them. You cannot confine them to everything you think you can to make them safe that'll work. If that child has to learn that lesson, they're still going to find a way to learn that same doggone lesson. But what you can do is realize that they're an unlimited being, you're an unlimited being, y'all both got a divine creator who can advise y'all at all times on how to deal with every situation. And that's what the course is trying to do, is trying to teach us how to get in communication with our divine guidance.
Now see, when you say that, the first thing I think of are the homeless people on the corner. That if this was a loving world, that wouldn't be a lesson someone would have to learn that way. And that's just the ego kicking back in, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, the homeless person is not there, ultimately. What's there is a child of God. And what I've done is I've now made him the homeless person. I've made him his role in the play. Now, what is my role in the play in regards to the homeless person? Well, if I feel spiritually led to give something to that homeless person, then I'll give something to that homeless person. If I don't feel spiritually led to give something to that homeless person, I'll say, let peace extend from my mind to yours and walk into Walgreens in total innocence. Because the person that you're supposed to help, you will. And the person you're not supposed to help, you won't. And that's the only rule.
The Course in Miracles says our home is peace.
Our home is peace. That's why it's not nothing outside of ourselves. But a lot of the guilt that we go through is feeling like we're not giving enough. And I'm saying that you're going to give where you're meant to give. You don't have to worry about that. You're going to give where you're meant to give. And where you don't give is not where you're meant to give. And if we could accept that, 90% of our guilt would be gone. And see, that goes back to what this lesson says. We got to learn how to look past our perceptual errors. And to look past my perceptual error would be what? For me to feel guilty about not giving. If I'm feeling guilty about not giving, I'm making a perceptual error. That's what he means by perceptual errors. You know. Don't worry about the homeless person in the street before you correct your own perception. That's the error that people make. It's like, let me go out here and try to do something about the homeless. No, why don't you go out here and do something about your perception? And then help the homeless. Because then you'll be helping the homeless from right perception instead of helping the homeless from wrong perception. See the difference?
Yeah, because all I'm doing is reinforcing my own belief that I'm a lousy person.
Exactly. That's what it said. You're going to have the perception that justifies how you feel. It was funny. I was on the way over here in my car, and all of a sudden I realized it was a breakthrough moment for me. And it's not going to mean that much to you because revelations are intensely personal to the one that receives them, and so you really can't communicate that. The best I can do is show you the effect of it by how I behave from this point on. But I heard my ego. I mean, I really heard my ego. I heard it like I heard it like I'd never heard it before, for the first time. I heard it like another person talking to me. It was the strangest thing that I'd ever done. It was like I was hearing the crap. I was really hearing the crap that I was saying to myself. I was so used to responding to it emotionally that I hadn't ever learned to hear the thought that was creating my negative emotions. So all of a sudden, I heard this voice saying the most negative, fearful things to me. That it was saying, it was trying to make me look at everything about my life that would make me wary, be afraid, or think that something's going to go wrong. It was constantly feeding me prescriptions for catastrophic outcomes. It was constantly telling me things that I needed to do before something horrible happened or something went wrong. It was a trip to hear that voice. And the breakthrough for me was to have no emotional response to it, but to actually almost be entertained by it. I got to the point that I almost was laughing. It was like when I was, it was so negative, and it was so consistently fearful, and it was so consistently always looking for what wasn't right, that it just started to sound ludicrous. And that was a breakthrough moment for me. I know something shifted in my being when that happened. And so as you learn to separate the ego from the person, then you realize that everybody around you, they're more or less just giving vocalization to the ego's voice. That they're not really, you're not really talking to that person. You're just talking to their ego. It's like as soon as a person gets into all the negative things that's happening in their life, you're not talking to the person. You're talking to their ego. Because the person would never see things that way. The real person would never see things that way. So when a person is talking to you from their ego, your job is to realize what they're saying is a perceptual error, to realize that what you're listening to is their own interpretation based on what they decided they want to see, and then you have to remember who that person is beyond what you're listening to, and that's forgiveness. I hear you talking about what went wrong between you and your sister yesterday. Okay, so now your ego is talking to me because it's focusing on all the perceptions that would justify its separation. If I could be conscious enough to remember that when you were talking, I'd be 10 million steps closer to enlightenment. Because most of the time when I'm talking to somebody, I'm not going through that internal process of reminding myself that I'm listening to their interpretations. You know, like people say, there are three sides to every story: is your side, my side, and the truth. That needs to be blazed everywhere. Whenever I listen to anybody tell me about their relationship or anything with anybody, then I know I'm listening to their interpretation of what's going on, and that's not necessarily the truth. So all of these are like practical applications of the course. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a huge breakthrough for me when I realized that my biggest gift to everybody around me, my husband, my kids, homeless people on the street, was when I was meant to be here and have fun with no guilt. Because it's about enjoying the process and enjoying your sexuality and enjoying your money and enjoying everything about you and saying shit when you want to say shit and just being out there and alive and not holding back because you don't want to show that you have money in front of somebody that doesn't have money, or it's about taking care of your kids when you don't really feel like taking care of your kids, and for always only choosing for peace for myself, always in every situation, even though before in the old way it made me feel a little bit guilty, because that's my greatest gift.
That's incredible. So you can relate to what I was saying earlier.
Exactly.
It's like I don't have the choices that I see most people think that they still have. I mean, I don't. There was a time when I did. And that's why I can relate to people still going through that. But I don't, because if my reality is a reflection of my beliefs, then as I believe this more, my reality is going to demand that I use this belief. It's going to be the only way I can deal with the reality that's being created by that belief. So the more Course in Miracles I accept as true, the more my reality demands that I use these principles in order to deal with my world, because my world is a reflection of these principles. But here's the thing that's a trip. It freaks your mind out to understand that the way you apply the principles is to do exactly what Terry just got through saying. To stop feeling guilty and stop attacking yourself is the perception that's demanded of me on this perception. It's like the level I'm on now, I have to see my innocence. And I have to go for my guiltlessness. And I have to see my happiness as being the number one thing. And I have, just like you're saying, you see that the way you have happiness in the world is that's really got to be your number one priority, is to have that total fulfillment in the world. And your world is going to demand that of you if you really want to be happy in it, because you can't be happy in a world that you're refusing to enjoy. So as long as you think that your joy is going to come through sacrificing, then you're using your world the way it wasn't meant to be used. And of course you're going to go through inner destruction, malice, and pain, because you're not giving your world any love to give you back. It's like standing in front of a mirror expecting it to show you a different color blouse than the one you have on. And then waiting, and then saying, "Well, I'm not gonna believe that blouse, that red blouse is there till I see it. But I got a blue blouse on. Well, you got to change into the red blouse. Then you're gonna see the red in the mirror, right? And so out your outer world. When we walk out that door, that is exactly the same principle that's operating. The world isn't gonna give you any more love than you allow yourself to receive.
People are missing out.
They're wasting so much time because they're listening to the voice I was talking about. They're listening to the voice that tells them that all of their joy is born of sacrifice and pain. We were talking about today. It's so deep. This book is so friggin' deep because it's so simple and direct in its truth. That's what I love about it. It is no fluff in A Course in Miracles. It's like, bam, it's straight to the point. Now, I might not like it, right? But that's not going to change the truth of it. Yeah.
I had a thought when you were just saying that about how ludicrous to think that the only way you can get joy is through suffering. It doesn't even work.
It doesn't even make any sense.
It makes no sense.
But do you see it?
I mean, I grew up on it.
Yeah. Does everybody in the room see it? Okay, so what we're looking at is our own past learnings. That's what the Course says. And then it's a workbook lesson that he says, I see only the past. And the whole lesson is based on the idea that the only thing that you're seeing is what you learn to see. So when you look at everything that all your friends and relatives are doing that you feel like you're not doing anymore the way you used to, you're just looking at your own past learnings. And that's how you forgive them. Is you know that you see that they're just seeing their own past learnings. You know, that the way my son was reacting to me was based on what he learned. And that's why I could forgive it. That's why I could look past it. It wasn't nothing against me personally. That's what he learned. So I had to get in touch with him beyond what he learned. Whew. And then you get that test, how much happiness can you take before you're tempted to feel guilty? you'll learn that being on the edge is testing your capacity to recede to the limit. That's living on the edge.
That sounds pretty good.
The truth does. That's what the book says to the Earl. It says, you can tell. How can you tell when you forgive? He said, well, there'll be a lightening in your chest. You'll feel more peaceful. You know when you die. If it's the truth, you should feel good. Which, if it's the truth, there should be something about it that gives you some peace. That's what I love about the Course in Miracles. Even if I don't know how to have unconditional love from everybody, that idea is a cool idea. And that's where the truth is. It's always going to go. You're going to go, wow. Even though I might not know how to do that, that's a really cool idea. But if you hear an idea and all you feel is sacrifice and loss and fear, that's not the truth. That's what the book is teaching me. That's how you tell the truth from the illusion. And we're tempted to believe it because so many of us believe the same lie.
It's guilt.
Because we've been taught the lie by people who in a lot of cases were miserable.
Right, but they were taught the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, exactly. It's like most people are just experts in teaching you exactly what not to do. That's what most people are. They're like the like, if you want to know what to do to make sure you're never happy, live like me, think like me. That's what most people who are upset all the time, unhappy people, they're just teaching you what happens when you think like they do. And that's a beautiful thing for them to teach you. But that's what miserable people are teaching you. They're teaching you, this is exactly the way you think if you want to be miserable. So then you got people who have not the slightest idea of what prosperity is and abundance, trying to tell you what to do with your money. You got people who've been in relationships all their life and can't even communicate to each other, trying to tell you how to have a relationship. You got people who own jobs that they hate, trying to tell you what to do with your career. Just go, you know, I don't even pretend that when I teach prosperity that I'm talking about my personal experience. I'm just passing on the message from someone who knows what it is. That's why I can feel innocent about teaching it. Because I'm learning it. But I don't pretend to know exactly how to do it. That's why I can listen to my guidance. It's only the person who thinks they know that, of course, that God can't talk to. Because the person that thinks they know, they're not listening no more.
All the really successful people I know, when it gets down to it, they don't know what they're doing.
Of course. Everybody successful knows about the X factor, that indefinable thing that seems to happen that you can't explain, that's the turning point. Everybody, but the Course, that's what's so cool how the Course talks about. It, one of my favorite lines that terrifies people is a line in a workbook that says, the healed mind does not plan. And that just wrecks the ego. It like trips people totally out. He says, because planning is something that you do when you don't have the faith that God will create a life for you that's great. It's really your way of defending against the fact that you're afraid to trust the universe. And he says, but when your mind gets healed, you don't make plans, you carry out plans. So to anybody that's looking at you, it'll look like you're making a plan, but you'll know within yourself that you're just carrying out something that you're being led to do from within. Does that make sense? So even though you're carrying it out and you may be led from within, part of that plan from within might be, well, you need to go over to Office Depot and make some copies at 3 o'clock. So to somebody looking at you, it looks like you plan to go to Office Depot at 3 o'clock. And so they think you planned it, but all you're doing is carrying out instructions. It's not your plan. You're just carrying out the plan. So, and that's cool. That takes care of my ego's need to feel like it's got something to do. But at the same time, I'm listening to my higher self, so the plan is cool.
Okay, so how do we fake all this until we are hearing the higher self?
You would follow your own inclinations, and through following your own inclinations and seeing the results of it, you would learn through those results how to tell the difference between when you're listening to yourself and when you're listening to spirit. You see what I'm saying? So until you get that level of faith, you would still look like you were carrying out your plans. Because remember, no matter what you do, you're not going to be condemned. So even if you make plans all day and all night, because if you don't make plans all day and all night, you'll lose your mind. Okay, go ahead and make your plans, and then go ahead and go out there just like your plans really matter, and put all your heart and your soul in your plan, knowing that you're going to be all right even if your plan fails, that you're going to be all right even if your plan doesn't happen. That way you can have fun with making plans. Then you get a chance to see the result of your plan. And then you're still studying, you're still meditating, you're still listening, so you're really still letting go of the blocks to hearing your inner guidance, and your inner guidance will start to get stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger, and you'll be able to tell from the very beginning when you're getting ready to make a mistake before you make one. That's what the Course calls vision. He says vision is when you can see the consequences of your actions even before you take them. So all of a sudden you walk up on that man, and you'll know in the first 5 minutes whether you're getting ready to take yourself right. You have vision. You'll know in 5 minutes whether you're getting ready to trip your old pattern and take yourself through the same thing you've done before. Why? Because you know that there are only two kinds of minds you're going to walk up on. You're either going to walk up on a man that really wants to know his innocence and wants to take responsibility for its experience, or you're going to walk up on a man that's full of guilt and anger that's blaming everybody. I don't care if they're doing it in a suit. I don't care if they're doing it in a mansion. I don't care if they're doing it in a Lexus. I don't care if they're doing it on a skate truck. They're still coming up. There's still just two mans you're going to be dealing with. And when you learn that, then your relationships become greatly simplified. It's not a lot of mans. It's just two. One that takes responsibility and one that doesn't. One that projects and blames, the one that sees itself as innocent.
I went to this job interview. This guy asked me if I wanted to do this job. He's a really wealthy man. He has all these businesses, and I wanted his office. And he says, "Well, what do you know about doing this?" And I said, "I don't know anything." And he just started laughing, and he goes, "You're perfect, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing either."
And I'm telling you, that's an enlightened being. That's what I'm saying. See, but don't you know the average person would not have the response that you had?
Yeah.
You know, the average person would not feel like I'm in the presence of an enlightened person because the person told me they didn't know what the hell they was doing. The average person would think that they were in the presence of somebody they need to be leery of because they don't know what they're doing. But see, you smart enough to know that here's a person that's very, very successful. That's the first thing I realized. Next thing I realized was he laughed, which is also the sign of a person who is conscious. They're happy. Then he said the third thing that a lightened being says, "I do not know. I don't understand." That's what is like the third or fourth lesson in the Course in Miracles workbook. I do not understand anything I see. I don't understand any stuff. But see, if you hadn't studied the truth or been aware of the truth, you wouldn't have been able to recognize that you were in the presence of someone that was cool. That's what the Course is teaching us. It's teaching us how to tell when we walk right up on what we want. Because in the past, it was right there in our face, but we didn't see it. Because we were using the old lessons.
He says all he does is he hires people who knows what they're doing.
Which anybody smart would do.
Yeah.
I mean, what would be smarter than that?
Well, he's
you know what I'm saying? You can do it. Why not?
He just drives around all day and we go to lunch and hang out.
But that guy also has a real level of trust that he's letting those people do.
Exactly. So he'd have to be very perceptive in order to recognize who to put in those positions. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
We're moving into another world. Right now we're moving into another world. And you can always tell when you're doing that because it'll look like some people falling away and it'll look like new people coming on the scene. It'll look like the circle gets smaller. You can always when you're in a transition, you can always after a while you'll be able to tell. And so, let's get this down. Anybody else? Okay, one more time. The world that we're looking at is what is reflecting my own internal frame of reference. What's my internal frame of reference? The ideas, wishes, and emotions that I'm having in my mind. What I'm seeing right now is what I'm projecting. So who can tell me, basically, in their own words, based on what we heard today, what is it that we do when we walk into a room or into any situation?
We decide what we're going to experience.
That's right. And then once we decide what we're going to experience, what do we do to make that experience happen? Thank you.
We project onto other people how we want them to behave, and what we want them to do to make us right.
Did y'all hear that?
Yeah.
Did y'all hear that? Okay. All right. So what would forgiveness be?
Seeing beyond that.
Boom.
No one. Okay.
Go ahead. I'm with you.
It's like, it's like knowing, wait a minute, we're all behaving according to the untruths we've been taught all our lives.
That's it. Trust yourself.
Okay. You're projecting the way you want them to behave, and they're behaving the way they've been taught to behave.
And so what would forgiveness be?
knowing it's not even there. It didn't even happen.
Right. That what you're dealing with for real is just the what you've learned.
That's the illusion.
That's the illusion. Because what was standing between me and my son was what? What we learned. There wasn't nothing standing between us. There wasn't really nothing between blocking us at all. The only thing that was there was what we learned. So forgiveness is not trying to overlook what you think somebody really did to you because you're trying to be good. That's why people don't like to forgive, because they think that it's asking them to overlook something that somebody did to them. And that's what people just get freaked out when you talk about forgiveness. They don't understand that real forgiveness is looking past the perceptual error that created the situation in the first place. It's learning how to remember the truth even when you're in the midst of all of the results of the old learning. And that's our challenge as spiritual beings. We're right in the middle of the old learning, having to remember the new learning for everybody. So I had to remember the truth for my son. I have to remember the truth for everybody. See, what does that mean? That means if I'm choosing to have a happy life and do the things that I really love to do, then you could make that choice too. And the fact that you're not making that choice is your choice. And I realize that, so I don't let it affect me and I don't let it affect my happiness. Part of my seeing your strength is to realize that you could see things another way. You're choosing not to see them another way. So you're the one that's making yourself feel the misery that you're feeling. I know you got the choice to change that anytime you want to. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to demonstrate to you the kind of life that a person will have when they do follow their heart, when they do follow their joy, when they do follow. So my job is not to join you in your suffering, but to be a complete witness to the alternative to what you're going through and let you see, because I'm your friend. So you know we're just alike. So if I can do it, you can do it. That's what's deadly about your friends and associates. You know, if I can choose, then they'll have to realize at some level they could choose if they want to. So every time you choose to do the things that bring you the most joy, then you're fulfilling your function for being born. You're actually doing what you came here to do, and then the universe is going to support you and do more and more things to help you have more and more joy so that you can be a witness to the joy of other people. And that's the way it works. So the hardest part is the beginning, because in the beginning your old learning is going to tell you you're being selfish for putting your own peace and your own happiness first, because you learned to believe that your peace and happiness was going to come from making a sacrifice to the people around you by sacrificing your happiness for whatever it is they want. So in the very beginning, that's the hardest time, because that's when you're going to be the most tempted to feel guilty. That first time that you say no. The first time that you go no. That you absolutely don't do some, make some sacrifice that you used to make. And the person may try to make you feel guilty for not making that sacrifice, and that's your first test. And if you can get past that test, it'll get easier and easier and easier and easier and easier to do what you love.
I found that in order, because I hate saying no to people, and I've said that I don't know how many times, I hate saying no to people. So what I've learned to do, which is in effect saying no, but sounds better, is that doesn't work for me right now.
Me too. And that's the truth. If you say something doesn't work, I've never seen the kind of defensiveness in telling somebody that something doesn't work for me than I have in saying no.
Exactly.
But the purpose is the same and the result's the same. You're not doing something you want to do. So you want to always use the form that would allow you to achieve your goal. And some people get hung up on the form. Well, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say, well, You ought to use the form that's going to allow you to achieve your goal the fastest. And the form that may do it if you're a person who likes to say yes before you can work up to a no, which you eventually get there. Some people have no problem with it. It gets cut right to the chase. No. You know, but if you're not one of those, then you will eventually. Because what's so cool is that as your peace continues to grow because you're not doing things that don't work for you, your peace will become so valuable to you that you'll get to the point that you can say no without malice, and then they won't feel defensive even though you said no, because you said no in peace and love. They'll get that. You know what I'm saying? It's just you said no, but there's something about the way you said it that they'll go, okay. And they, you know, and you work up to that, and you work up to that through maybe saying this doesn't work for me right now. Because I'm telling you, you get to a point that, I'm telling you, your peace and your happiness is so friggin' valuable to you that you will not jeopardize it anymore. I know it sounds strange to say that, but
yeah,
it's the absolute truth.
When you use the term stop spinning out so often, mm-hmm. then when you do, you're going, wow, that's what I used to do a lot. I don't want to do that anymore.
And you'll see people around you doing it, and you realize that's what you learned in the past too, so you'll be gentle and you'll be forgiving, because you'll know that they're just acting out the same stuff that you used to learn. Okay? So I'm going to stop here. And thank you for sharing with me. So I'm gonna pass this around. I appreciate it. What I do? Well, you know I do this for a living, so I don't have to say it every week. That always sounds funny to me, because I don't think I do anything for a living. But what I really realize is that I'm allowing myself to be sustained by doing what I love. And I'm also trying to be, and I'm being as helpful as I can be to everybody around me. Okay. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And I was the same way. I used to continually correct people. I don't care what they said. I felt like it was my job to give them another way of looking at it, another way of seeing it. And I wondered why people disappeared from my life. And I realized that no one likes to be told they're wrong over and over again. And it's hard for you to feel safe with anyone where you feel like you can't just say things the way you feel it. You know what I'm saying? It's like it feels so good to just say something the way you want to say it, however that is, and then have people just accept that. You know, without, and I'm not talking about just like what you did earlier, but I'm just saying, because you didn't mean, you know, I know your purpose is cool, but I'm just saying, I'm just giving this as an example because I know personally, I love to talk to people that when I tell them exactly how I'm feeling in the moment, no matter what's going on, that they let me say it without feeling like they need to correct me or change what I just said. I just do. You know, because I find a lot of times, instead of telling a person how I feel, I'll be more concerned with saying it the right way. And that gets in the way of the communication, because I'm always like, want to figure out the best way to say it so that they'll somehow agree with me or make it okay. Y'all know what I'm talking about? Rather than just going, you know, like if I walked in here and said, somebody said, Earl, how you doing? And I walked in here and I said, you know, today I really feel like the world is crap and I hate this place and I wish I wasn't here. Now, the first thing that someone's going to do is they're going to say, usually, they're going to go, well, in their mind, at first they go, I can't believe Earl said that. First of all, because Earl's not supposed to say anything like that. Earl's supposed to be positive and say only positive things all the time. Or they would immediately tell me, well, you know, that's just your perception and that's the way you see things. You just need to change your way of looking at it and you know it's really an illusion and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You get this whole range of things. Okay, so what happens in a situation like that? Well, you don't feel like communicating that, your honest feelings to that person again. That's what happens. So then the next time you see that person, they're going to say to you, hey, Earl, how you doing? Earl's going to say, fine. Right, he's going to say, fine.
But Earl
could say,
I've had better days.
You know, yeah, I'm only going to say Earl has had better days if I'm in the mood to listen to your correction. See, that's because I know the correction is coming next, unless you're really conscious. I know the next thing's going to come is the correction. So it's like, if I want to be corrected, then I'll tell the general public how I feel. If I want to be heard, I only talk to the people who don't correct me. Yeah. Check that out. You see what I'm saying? If I want to be corrected, I walk in the room and say, guess what, y'all? I really feel horrible today. And I bet you, I'm going to try to experiment sometime. Just watch. And I'm going to get correction from everywhere. I'm going to get all these different ways that I needed to see that. Right? And I wanted it, so I dared to say how I feel publicly. All right? Now, I really got some really serious things going on within me, but I just really need to get it out, and I just really need to say it, and I just really need to release it. And I'm going to come right to the person in private who I know is conscious enough not to correct me and who will just go, thanks for sharing. I'm glad you shared that. And if there's anything I can do, you know, I'm open. And you'll know, You know, so if you need a lot of correction quick because you're really sinking fast, okay, then tell the truth about how you feel in a general meeting or a general group or to the average person. To the average person.
Or in a group that goes under the guise of being a support group.
Exactly. Right. The same thing. Right. Okay. Okay. But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So you would only say it then what? If for whatever reason right now you really wanted to hear a whole lot of different ways of looking at it.
Yeah.
But you know what's the trip? The healing happens, this is so ironic, but the healing happens when you can say what you feel without being corrected.
Yeah.
It's which is just the opposite of what most people think. Most people think, I need to say this and then get all these people's input, and then that's going to help me with the problem. Which all these people telling me I'm wrong, I know how to handle it, and it's another way. Okay. But when I get conscious, I know that just to feel safe enough to communicate my feelings heals me. That in itself heals me. So treasure those people in your life that when you say exactly how you feel, they just let you be there and they let you say it without fixing you or correcting you.
They're hard to find sometimes.
They will show up when you stop doing it. I bet you if you be honest with yourself, when people say stuff to you a lot of times, you got a temptation to tell them another way to look at it. Especially if they're relatives, children, or anything like that. So I found that I was never around people who let me say what I was really feeling until I realized I was always correcting everybody. And then when I realized I was always correcting other people and then I stopped correcting people, then the people who were talking to me, which is great, they got a chance to say what they felt without being corrected. So they trusted me enough to let me do the same thing. So I got the instant karma back. You see, the same people that used to correct me stopped correcting me when I stopped correcting them. And then they turned, and a lot of them turned into the same people who could listen to me say my thing. It's amazing what happens when you change your own mind.
It feels good, too, when you can say something and they don't come back on you, too.
Oh, yeah. It feels good to go, today I really feel afraid of... if a person was to say, they walked in here and they said, I don't really know how I'm going to pay my rent next month and I really feel afraid and I just need to get that out. You know, that's not saying that at some level I don't know that God is there. That's not saying at some level I don't realize I must be creating it and it's coming from my own perception. This is how I feel in this moment. And if I can just express it, it will pass through me and then it will dissipate and it won't create a negative circumstance for me. But if I'm in a situation where I can never express what I feel, then it can never pass through me and leave me, and I keep that negative energy with me all the time creating negative stuff. See, the ego is going to say, how do I deal with this particular situation? And spirit's going to say, communicate what you feel. Because on the other side of you letting that depression out is the peace that you're looking for. But it's behind the depression. But if you share that with somebody who believes correction is healing, they're going to block you from getting it out. They're going to make you feel like you're wrong for the way that you think. You feel even more depressed now. You might even start off by saying to people, I really need to get this out, but I really want to ask you not to correct me. I'm not asking for an answer. I'm not asking for another way to look at it. I just need somebody to hear me in this moment. This is what I'm feeling. You know, a close friend, you can do that. You know, it's going to be hard as hell for them not to. But the ones who really care about you, they'll do it. But sometimes you have to tell people, I just need to get this out right now.
Do you want advice?
Because beware of someone wanting you to solve their problems. That's really a trip when you think about it. I make up a problem, and then I'm going to make you figure it out for me. and that's what happens in a lot of relationships. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then you get caught up in it. You really feel like somehow or another you need to come up with a solution for your friend. That's where your mind will start working. They go, you know, you're right. She's getting ready to talk to me. And, you know, I got to come up with a solution. And it's perfectly okay to say, I don't know what you should do.
Or I'm here for you. Let me know if that
did. Yeah, I'm here for you. Or follow your peace. I trust that you're going to do the thing that's best for you. I want you to really look inside and see what you, you know, what do you feel? What do you feel like you need to do? Don't be trapped into believing it's your job to solve someone else's problem, because that keeps you from remembering that your responsibility is to give it to the Holy Spirit. And so the minute you try to solve someone else's problem, it'll further convince you that you got to solve all of your own problems by yourself too. And then you forget to go to God.
When you say, "I don't know," you're kind of saying that God knows.
You are saying that God, and that's exactly right. You're saying God knows, exactly. You're saying God knows when you say, "I don't know."
Yeah.
Okay. So, I appreciate y'all for being here and learning with me and valuing what I do and wanting to grow together and remember the truth together. It's a tremendous gift. It's a tremendous gift. And every time I leave town and come back, it always feels like I'm starting over. It always, because I never come back to the same Denver that I left. And so I'm always curious to see who is with me at the next level that I'm on. And this is the first class since I got back. So I'm glad to see that we're still in the same order of learning and that we're still together. Because wherever I am right now, obviously you must be in the same place. And that'll happen a lot when you travel and when you go places. When you come back, you're not the same person you were when you left. And so you're literally not even coming back to the same city that you left. And you're on a different vibratory level. And so you'll find that a lot of times the relationships shift right after you leave somewhere and go somewhere and come back in some way. Because you've transformed in some way. And now the people around you need you to where you are now. So it's going to be interesting to see who's ready to go as deep as I'm about to go now. And I'm seeing that, you know, you all are so open to hearing it directly that it thrills me. You know, you don't have to like what you hear to listen to it. And those are the people you can always learn with. It's hard to teach people who need to feel good all the time. Because the truth doesn't always feel good when you first hear it. But you got to still want it, even though your ego goes, "I've been discovered." Like, you know, "I've been discovered," like today when you hear that voice. Really, when you're going to hear it, it'll just be telling you something else to be afraid of. It'll just be telling you something else to worry about. And you realize it is literally a voice. And you won't try to get rid of it, okay? Don't try to get rid of it. You just listen to it and don't do what it says. Just let it talk. In other words, you be the person that's listening and not saying anything.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, to your own ego, you go, "Thank you, ego, for telling me to get a bomb and blow them all up. I'll take that in consideration. I'm going to see if I can try a few less, you know, violent things first." You know, that's why I talk to my ego. Okay, thank you. Thank you. I had you, I trained you, and boy, are you good. So I'll see y'all the next time that we...
It's helped me so much, and I think that's probably why a lot of the stuff is coming out, because...
Good deal.
I kept saying that this is not the truth about me, and
And then when you forget, a holy relationship is having relationships with people who remind you that that's not the truth about you when you forget. See, that's a friend.
That's
all the course means by a holy relationship. People make it more complicated than that. They make everything about the course more complicated than it actually is. It's the simplest complicated book I've ever read.
Simplest complicated. In reality, it's like run, spot, learn, but our ego makes it so.